I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Cindy Little. Cindy's a paranormal investigator working in Central Texas. We talk about the spookiest spots in Waco, the tools she uses while ghost hunting, and the characteristics that typically signal paranormal activity. But first, it's the Small Business Spotlight, presented by American Bank.
Well, trying to get Waco, we don't have to be all huge and corrupted, but get some fun in here, you know? Yeah.
For the past 6 years, Stan Wojciechowski has given Waco music lovers as much fun as they can handle. On Franklin Avenue near the Valley Mills overpass, Stan operates Spin Connection with his wife and son, who help run the record store and sometimes concert venue, offering the most diverse music collection in town.
Section of like foreign music, whether it be French, Greek, Chilean, Peru.
Stan has loved nearly every type of music he's come across, but his first interaction set him on the course that he's still following today.
When the Beatles hit, that changed everything. That's probably what he got into it for good.
Once his record collecting evolved from a hobby into a business and they had adequate space, the Wojciechowskis started opening their area for concerts by local musicians. Stan says the greatest joy of running Spin Connection is supporting the artistic community in a tangible way.
We enjoy the young people coming in here and, you know, kind of going nuts and having a great time and leaving with smiles on their faces. And they were able to come to a place that, you know, didn't have drinking, didn't have fighting, you know, because it's not a bar or a club. It's just supposed to be good, clean fun.
On Friday, October 25th, Spin Connection will host its final concert, a Halloween-themed rager featuring seven bands, including a power pop trio called Uncle Brother. Jacob Green is the lead singer of Uncle Brother. Jacob says that non-traditional concert locations, like Spin Connection and others, are stepping up to address the city's lack of viable venues.
Venues seeing places open up their doors, like Brotherwell. I mean, they're not traditional. I mean, there are alcohol, but, you know, it's all ages, so kids can go in there. Also, you see Milo all day starting to do something, which is pretty cool. I just think it's great. I think it's obviously very important for a foundational music scene.
When he's not on stage, Jacob's busy running Keep Waco Loud, a music promotion company that books shows for local acts. His partner in the venture is his wife, Katie Selman, who says venues like Spin Connection fill a necessary niche in the city's music map.
And a lot of places like bars and where there's alcohol and stuff, like, my parents would not drop me off there. So it's allowing the younger generation, the younger kids, to a place to be creative and a place to be unique and express themselves and just have a good time.
As I thumbed through records, finally landing on a 1982 offering from Kool & the Gang, I heard Stan, Jacob, and Katie catching up, talking about their hopes for Waco's growing music scene.
Quality over quantity.
Yes.
This trio of Mellophiles are hell-bent on stirring up as much fun as possible, and they want to do it together.
But we're trying to have an effect also to join in with some other people to make it a good, more of a good music scene here, because music brings a lot. People look forward to seeing some of their favorite bands or some of their favorite singers, and if they don't have to drive an hour and a half one way or the other, it's nice.
The Small Business Spotlight is presented by American Bank, with three locations in town, including an expanded branch at Franklin and 4th. Austin Hooper is our residential real estate expert here on Downtown Depot and in studio again this month for the residential recap. Hooper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
I read recently that for the first 8 months of 2019, 407 permits for single-family residences have been pulled, which means that there is a ton of new construction happening in Waco. Where is this happening?
It's happening on the outskirts, so China Spring, the Highway 84 corridor that we've talked so much about, Hewitt, Lorena, that's where it's happening.
This market, as we can see by the permits pulled, is hot. It is continuing a ride that we've been seeing of this slowing but growing trend where there are more houses being built, there are more people moving to McLennan County, and you have some information that tells us that the population itself is growing.
Indeed. So, you know, we know that Waco is becoming more and more of a destination for people as the the cat's sort of out of the bag with the good thing that we've got going here in Waco. Traditionally, the population growth has been about 1% per year. There's some data that came out recently. We hit a peak of a 1.7% population increase in 2015. And it's hovered around there since then. Last year is about a 1.3% increase, so slowing down a little bit, but still ahead of traditionally what we've seen here in Waco. And the reason these numbers are important is they play a lot into when the city is doing work to come up with the impact fees that they're charging developers in some of these outside communities. I know we've talked about China Spring and some others being a little strapped when it comes to the infrastructure, the roads and sewer capacities.
So let's dig into that for a second, because I read an article about this a few weeks ago that the city was considering instituting impact fees. What are impact fees and what do they mean for a developer?
Essentially, it's you can maybe think about it as a tax. It's a fee that the city charges a developer to put in a neighborhood where the infrastructure doesn't currently exist. So any new neighborhood that goes in to the outskirts of town, it does have an impact on the infrastructure of the city as a whole. And so what the impact fees do is they help to provide, one, some funds for maintenance of those existing utilities and a lot more than that.
When you think about it, Austin, if it costs $10,000 to put in a water line and there is one family that lives at the end of the block in China Spring, it costs the exact same amount to put in that water line downtown where there's an apartment building where 100 people live. So we can see when talking about impact that it's important to have density. It's important, and the dollar goes further when people live in dense urban environments like that. And right now in downtown, there are a few options for people who want to live there.
Indeed, pretty exciting. There's a lot more beds coming to downtown, which is going to, we've talked about the chicken and egg with downtown residents and retail options, and you kind of need both for a healthy downtown. And really exciting to see there are both for lease and for sale units coming to downtown. The Madison is now open on Austin Avenue. Those have been leasing very well. And then the Barron's Lofts, which has been converted to condos, those are now for sale. So an opportunity to own real estate downtown.
Austin Hooper, our housing expert, in again this month for the residential recap. Thanks so much for filling us in.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Our commercial real estate expert, Greg Gleim, is in here to tell us what is happening in the real estate sector. Greg, welcome to Downtown Depot.
It's good to be back.
East Waco has been in the news so much in the last couple weeks, and I want to just get your feelings on a couple of these big hitters. The biggest one has been TFNB, Your Bank for Life, announced that they have taken over the Train Waco building there on Elm Avenue. That was a pretty fractious exit from the Train people who've now moved into the CrossFit space there at Franklin. But what do you make of the legitimacy of East Waco and the Elm Avenue corridor now that a bank is there?
Yeah, I think, I was really surprised that it had been kept under the rug and everybody was kind of wondering what was going on with that building. It was very, very quiet there for a while. So David Littlewood and the bank deciding to put a branch there is awesome. I think it's a great use for the building. I think it's a great concept for the community over there. And as we see these hotels and new businesses popping up, it only makes sense to have a bank there. And I've got to commend them for being the first ones to take the step and enter the market there.
TFNB has a reputation locally of being willing to take a risk on entrepreneurs that other banks might not have. So it does seem like for this newly emerging corridor on Elm Avenue, that TFNB would be a really reasonable partner for people who are in town and maybe want to start a business and they can't get traditional funding from another bank.
Yeah, that's right. And they kind of put their money where their mouth was, right, by going in and actually setting up a physical location there. So, again, no, I've heard a lot of comments from other lenders and a lot of people throughout the community who are real appreciative and excited for them making the move over there.
I had a conversation with David Littlewood and Jason Lavender a few months ago about putting a bank somewhere on Elm Avenue. At that time, they were only talking about a drive-through ATM. And I just said, guys, I don't really care where this is on Elm, but I want this to be in East Waco. East Waco deserves its own banking institution. I'm so grateful for them for taking that leap and really doing the full service institution there. A little bit closer to the river on Elm Avenue, The city of Waco just earmarked $5.5 million to make Bridge a festival street. Going to have lots of planters and nice brick pavers and benches. Having a public amphitheater like they're constructing over there really can have a tangible benefit for all of the business owners who are around a festival street like that.
Yeah, that's right. I think that concept's fantastic. I think, you know, if you look back at the homecoming weekend from Baylor and how many people were downtown and how full of life downtown was, and that concept going in on the east side of downtown is fantastic. I think it's a great venue. I think that's a great source of funds going to a concept like that.
Dr. Nancy Grayson, who owns Lula Jane's, had been working on a grocery store over there next to Revival Eastside Eatery, and now has put her building up for sale. She's not going to move forward with the food store that she had planned on and has this property listed. It seems as if there are a lot of people who want to be on Elm Avenue, but the issue they keep running into is that there is not move-in ready space. This is an example of something where a tenant could be there next week.
Yeah, that's right. That is, I haven't looked inside the building yet to see how far along it is. But you hit the nail on the head. There are not buildings to move into that are ready to occupy. And really, that's the case in all downtown. And so that building being available, I heard that the price was fairly high. But more importantly, I hope a good use, similar to First National Bank of McGregor, something else that the community needs, and that's part of the development over there. That's a great building and a good opportunity to accomplish something like that.
The building is move-in ready. And secondly, the streetscape improvements in front of the building have already been completed. So if you're buying anywhere else on Elm Avenue, you're going to get your sidewalks torn up in the next few months or years. But at least over on Nancy's building, that's there. So she's got a sign up in the window. You can call her. Or, of course, you can call Greg Gleim and talk to our commercial real estate expert about any of your needs on Elm Avenue. Greg, thank you so much for telling us what's happening in East Waco.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm now joined in studio by Cindy Little. Cindy is a paranormal investigator working in McLennan County and kind enough to join me in the studio. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you for having me.
Cindy, what is your Waco history?
Well, my husband and I are originally from Washington State, and so I was interested in a PhD program down here at Baylor and got into the program, and they gave me fellowship and a stipend. And so it was a really great, great opportunity in their educational psychology department. And then we just saw it as kind of a God thing. My husband got this amazing job at Brazos Electric as their director of information systems. And so he's still there and we're still in Waco and we just love it here. And that was about 19 years ago.
Were you involved in paranormal studies prior to moving to Waco?
No, but I've always been interested in it ever since I was little. You know, I always love reading spooky, you know, real life ghost stories and things like that. So it's always kind of been at the back burner. You know, I've always had an interest in it.
What was your earliest experience with the paranormal?
Like an actual paranormal experience. You know, it's funny. I'm kind of different than a lot of other investigators who say, oh, I've had these experiences all my life, ever since I was little. I had my first paranormal, what I considered my first paranormal experience, 2 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. I was on a ghost tour at the Magnolia Hotel in Seguin, Texas. I think that's the right way to pronounce it. I hope.
Seguin,
I think. Anyway, they got ghost tours and everything going on. And so I was in this group and we were in the kitchen and the lady leading the tour, who is also the homeowner, was saying, okay, you know, we have a particularly feisty spirit here in the kitchen, you know, just be on the lookout. She might touch you or move things or whatever. And I'm kind of, you know, and I'm a little more, well, more than a little more. I'm pretty much on the skeptical side of things. And so I'm standing back there kind of towards the back of the group next to the sink. And all of a sudden, the side of my face just got really hot, almost like burning hot. And I'm kind of looking around. I'm like looking for heater vents. I'm looking for, you know, anything that would be, you know, letting off heat. And there was just nothing, nothing there. And so I thought, well, this is just really strange. And so she stops her spiel and she goes, oh yeah, there she is, right back there behind that gentleman. And she pointed to the gentleman that was standing in front of me. So basically the ghost supposedly was standing right next to me. And I thought that was really kind of an interesting thing to have happen.
So she was able to see this ghost, but you weren't able to see it, although you could feel it.
No. Yes. Yes. She has more psychic abilities. And I mean, I don't want to, you know, since we have real limited time, but, you know, we're all on a spectrum of being able to sense these types of things. And there are people that are, you know, way over here in the psychic realm that can, you know, see ghosts all the time and sense things. And then there's people that are at the complete opposite end, which is like me, who doesn't really sense these things at all. And so that's the whole, you know, it's in the discipline of parapsychology and just the powers of our minds and how people are wired up to experience these types of things.
It makes sense to me that someone who has a lot of personal experiences with the paranormal would be involved with this type of work. As someone who is as skeptical as you, I would imagine that you are a more non-traditional person in this space.
Yeah, there's more like me, but I'm a little more of an odd duck. So there's a lot more. It's one of my opening questions on the class that I teach at MCC is, on the spectrum here, are you a true believer or a skeptic? You know, and I'll mark everybody off as, you know, one or the other. And 99% of the time, I'll get true believers. The whole class will be true believers with maybe one lone exception every once in a while.
Is the idea that there is paranormal activity happening around us at all times, and going back to the skepticism versus belief, some people are more able or more sensitive to interpret that?
Yes, that is exactly it. There is a big mental component, best we can tell. And I mean, there's over 100 years of scientific research on this. And so it just depends on, for lack of a better way to say it, just how we're wired up. I mean, if you're wired up to sense these types of things, then yeah, you're going to have a lot more paranormal type experiences than someone like me who's not quite as wired up and sensitive to things like that.
Can you tell me a little bit about your experience with the paranormal in McLennan County? Have you done ghost hunting in Marlin or in Waco and run into anything interesting?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have. It's funny that you should mention Marlin. I investigate with a group in Marlin. We investigate on a very regular basis the Palace Theater. And that's where I had another more recent, this is about a year ago, paranormal experience where I saw an actual ghost. I saw an actual apparition in the basement there. And so I was down there with a group of people and they were, you know, and I always have my, you know, instruments, my EMF and my cameras and all this stuff, you know. And so I'm looking at that and I just happened to look up into the corner of the basement and I see a gentleman that was, you know, is one of the guests. And so I'm thinking, okay, that's one of the guests because he's got his little instruments and he's looking too. And then I saw another gentleman right behind him. And, you know, I didn't think anything about it. It wasn't like he was, you know, floating or, you know, had old timey clothes on or anything. He was just a guy with dark pants and a light shirt and dark hair. You know, and so I'm thinking, okay, well, that's another guest. And so he steps out from behind the other guy and walks towards me and vanishes. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, that was an apparition. That was not a guest. And so that was pretty cool.
So these ghosts look like humans?
Absolutely.
Until they disappear.
Till they do something non-human. Yeah, like walk through a wall or disappear. That's usually what happens. And yeah, a lot of people, you'll hear all kinds of stories of, you know, I was on this ship or in this house or wherever, and I saw this person, you know, walking up the stairs or walking towards me, and I just thought it was another person until they disappear.
Is there any sort of rhyme or reason as to when or where a ghost will appear? Like this, there had been a group of Native Americans here and their bodies weren't buried, and so now we believe there are spirits inhabiting this area.
there's a lot of movies that that, you know, have stuff like that. And I mean, that's but you touch on something that's really kind of the $1 million question. I mean, if we could figure out why some places are haunted and why they aren't, that would just be really great information to have. Best guess at the current time is there was, you know, trauma, some sort of trauma. And, you know, you think of the like the battlefields or warships or, you know, buildings, castles and things that have been around for a long, long, long time. You know, if there's any kind of like real traumatic type energy, the kind of a working theory is that energy gets trapped there somehow, and that can trigger paranormal activity.
You're hearing from Cindy Little, a paranormal investigator working here in McLennan County. I'm a brand new baby in this thing. I love hearing from someone who's involved in the space because, of course, you hear about ghosts and spirits growing up. And like you mentioned earlier, some of us are more predisposed to understanding these and feeling these. And while I haven't personally had experiences, people that I know that I consider very credible have had very intense experiences with things like this, whether it be religious or not.
Mm-hmm.
So a breeding ground for spirits might be an area where trauma had happened.
Exactly.
Do you see McLennan County in particular as a spooky place? I hear stories about the witch in Cameron Park, or, you know, the Waco Indians that were here and, you know, systematically removed. It seems as if Waco in particular, you know, the Waco horror, Waco in particular has experienced a lot of trauma. And I would think that it is replete with paranormal activity.
There's a lot of paranormal activity in downtown Waco and in Cameron Park. And like, I don't like to mention the some of the actual businesses that I've been in because, you know, just to protect their privacy. But there was one of the bars downtown that I investigated, lots of activity, black shadows, strange noises, things moving. And I did a little research and found out that that particular bar was only a half a block from the R.T. Dennis building, which collapsed in the 1953 tornado. And so I see that a lot. I'm not surprised that a lot of the buildings downtown have paranormal activity just because of something like that.
There was such an intense, traumatic moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at some of the historical photographs, I mean, the carnage was just overwhelming. I mean, it was just, it was very, very bad. And so, yes, you know, there was a lot of trauma and energy. So I'm not surprised, you know. Another one that we investigate regularly is the Dr. Pepper Museum, which is only a few blocks away, and they got hit by the tornado. And so we were just there last week investigating, and we get pretty consistent paranormal activity there.
Did they call and say, hey, there's a weird noise coming out of the freezer. Come check it out, Cindy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they allow me to take my classes there. And we, like I said, they're getting ready to do their Dr. Pepper After Dark. And so I went with the group that I work with out in Marlin. And we just did a flat-out investigation so they could have information for their upcoming events.
Can you explain to me the science behind measuring this activity and what, if you're going on an investigation, what that looks like?
Okay. Yeah. Number one, there is no such thing as a ghost detector. So, you know, if somebody says, oh, I've got a ghost detector, or I bought this ghost detector app for my phone or whatever, it's a bunch of baloney. We don't even know what ghosts are, really. So how can you detect them directly? So all of our equipment is just an enhancement of the natural senses. So you've got IR, which is, you know, infrared cameras that can, you know, see better in the dark. And you've got full spectrum cameras, which look at ultraviolet through infrared light. You know, that just kind of enhances what you can see. We have electromagnetic field meters that measure fluctuations electrically. Of course, any kind of audio recordings. I'm trying to think of anything else. Temperature readers to, you know, look at temperature changes. We have data loggers that are kind of an all-in. I love those. They're kind of an all-in-one tool that you can just set somewhere and they'll measure the electricity, the temperature, you know, all that stuff.
And if you see sharp spikes and variance, that's how you can tell there's paranormal activity?
That's how you can tell that something strange is going on. And that's really, you know, kind of, that's where I kind of limit it. Something odd is going on here. And so what we try to do is triangulate. You know, for example, you know, we're going to have, if somebody's going to do an EVP session where they ask questions and see if a ghost answers through a recorder, they're going to, you know, we're going to have two or three people in there with cameras and electromagnetic field readers. We're going to see. And so if there's like, okay, the EMF goes off, we catch something spooky on the camera and we get voices, you know, ghostly voices on the audio recorder, at that point is when I'm starting to say, yeah, there's something paranormal going on. But there needs to be more than just one thing.
What is the biggest misconception that the public has about the work that you do?
That's a really good question. I think a lot of people, you know, they're either really interested and they watch the TV shows, which are very entertaining, but not real accurate. And so they think it's really exciting and, you know, and oh my gosh, you're seeing ghosts everywhere and spooky, spooky. And it's like, no, not really. It's a lot of just sitting in the dark and musty old buildings. You need to, it's more like fishing, you know, you just need to be patient and sit. Something may happen, something may not. And then you have the other folks that are like, oh, no way. I don't want anything to do with that. Mm-mm, no, that's too spooky or crazy evil or, you know, and they'll just want nothing to do with it.
We've got a really wide-reaching audience here on KWBU, and I want to make sure we can put the bat signal out for you. Is there a building or an area in Waco that you've always wanted to investigate, that you've been stymied at one point, and maybe we can get some public support and get you in there?
I would love to go and do an investigation in the Alico building. Never been able to get into the Alico building. Many years ago, talked to a security guard that said there was paranormal activity in the basement. He goes, the doors would open up automatically. He goes, the ghosts open doors for me down there. At least they're polite. And so I've always thought the Alico building would be a really fun one to investigate.
I imagine that would have some of that 1953 tornado trauma too.
Absolutely. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
What do you hope to find down there?
You know, I don't know. I just keep an open mind on these things. I mean, kind of the gold standard is seeing that ghost. I mean, and those are so rare, seeing those apparitions. And
you've had one of those experiences in the whole tenure.
Yes, yes. I've been doing this now for about 11, 12 years. I've seen one ghost. Some people don't see ghosts after many more years than that. So that would be really cool.
When hearing people's accounts of paranormal activity, how do you personally determine whether it's credible or not?
You know what? I take everybody at their word, and you know, and I've not heard anything just really super crazy sounding. I mean, everybody I've spoken to is very rational and reasonable, and they're just telling me stories about, you'll never believe this, but, and they'll just tell me this incredible, fantastic story. And if I get a chance to investigate it, great.
Cindy Little is a paranormal investigator working in McLennan County. How can people find you?
Well, they can find me on Facebook, but I can give you my website address. It's WacoGhosts, all one word, .com.
Cindy Little, paranormal investigator here on KWBU. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to the folks at Spin Connection, American Bank, Austin Hooper, Greg Gleim, Cindy Little, and you for tuning in. We'll be back on Waco's NPR station with another dose of downtown news on the first Friday of November. For info in between episodes, follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Waco Business News. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.